welcome along to our very first live Greenlight podcast. This is so exciting to have everyone here as well, but to also just be live and actually, like, there are other humans around. It's like, it's wild. So we have two out of three hosts here today. I'm Caroline West and I'm joined by my fabulous co-host, Alex. How are you?
Hi, yeah. Alex Black from the Active Consent team. So this is our first ever live podcast for Greenlight, coming to you from NUI Galway Students Union Consent Week. So we're having a fantastic week, chock full of fantastic events around sexual health and consent in particular, which is why we've brought our fabulous guests in today. And so we've got Shauna Scott from Sex Shuppa.
Queen of the Vibrator.
Exactly, the Vibrator Queen. Amasha Costa, who is the Consent Officer for UCC FemSoc.
Queen of Cork.
And we also have Robbie Lawler, who is a HIV activist, a postdoctoral candidate, and I think many things. Whenever I was writing your bio for this, Robbie, you wear quite a lot of hats.
Thanks.
Very stylish hats, though, we have to say. So very, very nice. You're all absolute legends and we're all absolutely, like, so grateful to have you here, because I think it's a really nice mix of learning about consent, because you all are coming from extremely different backgrounds. I mean, Shauna, your formative years would have been in America. Amasha, you were talking to me earlier about Bollywood, which I'm super excited to learn a lot more about. Robbie, you may or may not have been a queer at a young age, you know, before you discovered yourself, so that's going to be really interesting. But as a man, that's going to be really interesting to see all the different viewpoints, where everyone's coming from. So what we have talked about in the podcast was, like, those formative moments when we realize actually, like, pop culture has a lot to say about sex, and you know sometimes you're singing along to a song and you're like, oh, these lyrics are, like, really about sex. Oh, I did not realize that. And I was singing that out loud around my parents. So, cringe moment. Do any of you have any of those particular moments where you kind of realized, oh, this song or this film or this movie is actually speaking to me on a very different kind of sexy level that it didn't do before? I'm actually going to go to Amasha first on that one. Tell us about Bollywood and Sri Lankan culture.
Oh my God, Caroline, you're putting me on the spot here.
No pressure.
If you don't know, I grew up in a very South Asian household. So my dad's Bangladeshi, my mom's Sri Lankan, but I grew up with, like, South Asian kind of, like, films, soap operas. My mom lived for, like, Sri Lankan soap operas. It was, like, the highlight of the day every time I came back from school. Grew up on Bollywood music and, like, films and stuff. And I think it's just very interesting because I also realized I was queer at, like, 12 watching Bollywood. it is very interesting because I was it was just a moment when I witnessed my first, like, queer relationship on TV in Bollywood, and I was like, wait, South Asian women can be queer, like, you know, this whole idea that, like, because in such a patriarchal society, which is very present in South Asian communities, it's always been like, oh, it's just a relationship between a man and a woman, like, you know, then you get married and that sort of, like, it's just chaotic. But, like, for me to be able to see two women being together on Bollywood TV, I was just like, oh my God, I can be with a woman, like, you know. But it's just very interesting because Bollywood really, really shaped my idea of thinking of what a woman had to be and what consent really was. And it was nothing, absolutely nothing to what I know now about consent, which I think has really vastly changed. And, like, it's just... I have no words, but I'm once again on the spot, but sure look, we can do this. And I think it's just very interesting because the way that consent is depicted in Bollywood is that women have no opinions over their own bodies and that it's always the man who decides whether he wants to, like, you know, to do what he wants to do, basically, and women have no voice in it. And that was what I grew up with, and it was a really, really bad, like, aspect of about like talking about consent and talking about sex. And I thought it was just really horrific now that I look back at it. But at the time, when you grow up in that household, you're just like, right, so that's what it's meant to be, you know. So yeah,
that's so interesting, Amasha, because I think a lot of people in Ireland as well can kind of relate to, I don't think I heard the word consent until maybe after college. I certainly wasn't getting consent workshops in college. And especially in Ireland, I think people often forget how quick our kind of social change has happened, even since the 90s, and even the kind of hangover that we have for Catholicism and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So the social change has been so fast that I think people often forget that actually we didn't grow up with these values, even like quite young people. I'd be interested, Robbie, growing up as like a young gay man in Ireland, what were maybe your more formative experiences of what you saw represented on TV, and maybe even about your own identity and what the messages you were getting were?
I always say I had an idyllic childhood, but actually looking back, you know, there were really problematic things that happened in my childhood. And one of them was, like, my mum raised 5 kids on her own. She's like a superhero. We love her. I come from a really rough estate in Condachin, you know, like a really, really working class. And I was always told growing up, if you turn out gay, we're going to beat you up. Well, I was fed up anyways. But I was always, always told that by my brothers, by everyone. It was just what it was. And slurs were thrown around left, right and centre. And so I really repressed my sexuality. I didn't come out till I was 18. It wasn't until I put my penis in a vagina, I was like, I'm gay. Honestly, that was the moment
for me.
I admitted to myself I was gay. I know.
That poor woman. Girl. Jesus.
I know. I didn't say it to her.
Okay, good. Literally in the moment being like, you know what? I think thank you very much for your time, but no.
I know. Oh, and she's so lovely. Like, we still talk, and she's happily married now, and her life's so I didn't traumatize her too much. But actually, it's really interesting and what was really formative for me, and it was actually Will and Grace, which was first cast in 1998, actually, I believe. And it was the first primetime TV show with the lead characters were gay. And I always had such a crush on Will Truman. Like, he was my first ever crush. But I had to balance it out with, well, I'm not gay, but I fancy the whole lot of this person. I watch him all the time. So it was really interesting what repression can do, because I couldn't admit to myself that I fancied him, but I couldn't stop looking at him. But anyways, a few years later, when I eventually did come out at 18, I remember in 1920, I was like, I kind of miss being in front of a TV saying, oh, he's gorgeous. And it's such a small thing, but just being able to say that and from family, for me, was quite big. I remember saying to myself, why not just do it in front of your mom and get Gates' reaction? Because she was fine. It's just something we didn't really talk about. And then Will came up, and Will and Grace was like, this is my perfect opportunity. I was like, Ma, I fancied Will for years. And she's like, why wouldn't you? He's fucking gorgeous. So, yeah, Will and Grace has had a really big part of my heart. And Will Truman. But yeah, so that was really formative. It really challenged my belief system about, you know, fancying something that for me was out of bounds. And I think good old Will helped me come to terms. Will and a vagina.
And never the two shall meet in the middle. Definitely not.
I think Will's story was quite similar, actually, that he had, it wasn't it that he was with Grace and then he realized, no, I'm sorry, I'm actually quite gay.
Oh my God, maybe I just see so much of myself in him. That's why I really
it's like your cipher. Because I remember Will and Grace was one of those TV shows that'd be on in the morning. I think it was a Channel 4 real early. So if you woke up early on a Saturday, you'd be watching that or like Frasier. So I actually remember, I have way more memories of watching Will and Grace than I realized as a child or as a teenager.
That's mad. And yeah, the reboot didn't live up to any good expectations, but we will not mention that. We'll move on from there. Sure. So Shauna, what about yourself then? You know, you're grown up in the States, which is the States is its own world. Like, it's so vast and so many different experiences there, but you know, you're probably watching the same TV stuff as us.
Yeah, vastly, like pretty much like the same as Ireland, like got all the same TV shows. I think for me, like one of my earliest memories, I was actually telling a friend this recently, that like when I was 4, Who Framed Roger Rabbit came out, and oh my God, I'm such a fucking cliche. Jessica Rabbit. Mm-hmm. It was like this, that moment, that opening scene where we're like, she comes out on stage and you could just like feel her raw sexual power, even as a young child. I knew what that, I just intrinsically knew what that was and like what that power meant. And then similarly, like, didn't understand my feelings towards her. I'm like, I want to be her. But then like later on being like, do I want to be her or do I want to be with her? And funny you should mention Will and Grace, because I kind of had similar feelings about Karen. Like,
he was your crush?
Yeah, but it was weird because like, okay, this is a straight woman, I'm straight. And it was like one of those things where like I couldn't really parse out, because I think at the time there wasn't really language around like being a quote unquote straight girl having a crush on a straight woman, because and also like at that time, because I like, you people are too young to remember, but there was a time back in the day, back in like the late 90s, early 2000s, where like if you self-identified as bisexual, we didn't have pansexual, everybody, you were either gay, straight, or bi, and if you were bi, you were just doing it for attention, especially if you were a girl. So very much like I would have these moments where I'd be like laying in bed at night just thinking to myself, you're bi, but then never coming out, never saying it. I couldn't even say the words out loud to myself, because that would mean that I had like notions about myself. So that was interesting, like having, but then like a little bit later after I graduated high school, the idea of having like, oh, you have a girl crush kind of thing was more socially acceptable for people who were straight. So you could like joke about having like a girl crush and that was totally fine. And then I ended up coming out as bi like in my mid-20s.
That's so interesting. Just one thing that you're talking about, that kind of, you know, bi erasure. And it's something that exists not only kind of in, not to say the straight community and the LGBT community, but like bi people and bi women in particular face so much erasure and so much of that self-doubt that so many queer women, like, they don't even bother coming out because they're kind of like, oh, maybe I'm just doing it for attention. I had such an interesting experience where growing up, I was like, I don't know if anyone else was really emo, but basically everyone was saying that they were bi when I was 14 and 15 or whatever. I was really emo and we were almost so accepting of it that I remember being like, guys, come on, like there's people that are actually bi, and like I think we're all being a little bit flippant about this. But it's so funny how like depending on the community that you grow up in, maybe the kind of attitudes you have towards that. And something I love that you mentioned Jessica Rabbit, and you know what, cliche, but it's a classic for a reason, and there's people dressing up as Jessica Rabbit to these days for a reason. One thing we spoke about actually in our first podcast, and I'm sure, I don't know if anyone remembers this, I did see a TikTok about it recently, so I know it was formative for other people, but who remembers in Aladdin, Jasmine as Jafar's like sexy prisoner? Amasha reacted immediately, so I'd love your take on that.
I grew up on too much Disney, and I will say Jasmine and Robin Hood.
Those were your icons.
Those were my icons. I as a child, the fact that I was attracted to cartoons, but the thing is that they draw them really sexy. And like Anna Kendrick, I remember watching an interview of her talking about being attracted to them, and I was just like, that does not seem right. But like I really remember, because like, bearing in mind a South Asian household, a Middle Eastern culture, and then there was Jasmine, and she was this gorgeous human being, and I was like, she looks pretty, I want to be here, or I want to be with her. Through Aladdin, he is just like, you know, a dirtbag, he doesn't deserve the love.
And he wasn't that great either, like Aladdin, he was a street rat, let's just, yeah.
He had street smarts. But the great, really, the wild thing about that is looking back at it and the whole, like, she's Jafar's sexy prisoner thing. And, like, watching that as a child, I remember being like, something's happening here. Like, Jasmine's in her red suit and her red bra, and she's trapped. And it's kind of funny when you look back at cartoons, the, like, very low-key, like, dom vibes that are happening, that suddenly she's Jafar's sexy prisoner. And I'm like, this is a kids' TV show. What are they trying to tell us? And that kind of, it's not even, it's just funny how it's the kind of non-consensual aspect of it. And yeah, it's a very interesting message that they're throwing this in, like, oh, it's against her will and Jafar is trying to marry her to get power. And I'm like, okay, lots of interesting mixed messages that we're giving to kids here.
A little problematic on some levels, but still fun. But I want to go to Robbie on this. Do you remember the British TV show Queer as Folk? Because I loved watching that. And that was the original, not the American version, now the original British one. And that was like, you know, gay men in Manchester. And I was like, oh, this is like, that's probably the first time I realized there's a whole world out there, like a community, like people organize communities around their sexuality and their gender. And I thought, that's a thing, like we can actually do that. That's wild. So did you watch that growing up?
I never watched that. I think, again, that was in around 1999. It was aired. Now, I was born in 1991, so I was 8. And I was so repressed then, and because it was a lot of sexual content, which was amazing. But for me, I think it would have been a bit too much. I think that's why the soft coreness of Will and Grace was an easy transition, especially for 8-year-old Robbie. So I never did. But I realized how profound that was for many queer people of its time. Like Morris, my partner, would always go back and talk about it. And just it was a sexual awakening for so many people, young queer kids at the time. So I do see the power in it. If we talk about Russell T. Davis, who made Queer as Folk, though, you know, he also created something recently, which is It's a Sin, last year, which was like the most watched show, I think, on British TV of 2021, which was just, for me, mind-blowing as someone who lives with HIV. And if you don't mind me talking about it now, actually, I just realized I completely just changed your topic.
Floor is yours.
Why is it so important for me? Well, for one, I actually didn't want to watch it initially because I'm sick of white gay men dying of AIDS being the only representation of HIV in pop culture. Like, come on. Like, God forbid if you're a woman living with HIV, you don't even get a look in. And as someone who also does sexual health and works in HIV and is with HIV, I'm just so sick of also looking at everything so depressing about HIV. So I was like, nah, I'm good. But then Jennifer Zamparelli was like, Robbie, come on tomorrow, we're going to talk about It's a Sin. So I was like, okay. So I had to watch the 5 episodes in like, I was traumatized. But anyways, what I loved about it was, although it was white gay men dying of AIDS, it brought humanity around living with HIV. I also was very unapologetic around the sexual content as well, which was amazing because normally sex is this horrible thing when it comes to HIV and AIDS, but it was actually showing just how an integral part of our community was, and it was still celebrated even throughout the show. So I thought that was really, really good. I do think it has its down pitfalls. For one, so many people don't know anything about HIV, like at all. So the fact that this is the most watched show of the time and they get no idea what it's like to live with HIV today when the medical advancement is huge, even at the end, if they talked about what U equals U meant, that people living with HIV can't pass it on, just a little message at the end, that's all I was looking for. But unfortunately, the whole community had to kind of fill that gap that the show didn't. And that was exhausting on all of us. One amazing thing was I got Nathaniel Hall on, who was the partner of Ollie Alexander, who unfortunately died of AIDS, in the show. But he actually lives openly with HIV. And he's done a lot of great activism. So he got bombarded by so much media outlets to kind of tell his story and to fill that gap. So it was amazing. It just shows the importance of representation and having people going through the lived experiences, representing their stories and their history. So so many good things. I think he could have gone that little bit extra in terms of representation, get more positive people on. And a little bit more education. But again, Jennifer Zamparelli asked me to be on. And because I went on Jennifer Zamparelli, then I went into Tommy Tiernan because the booker is the same or similar. And then that got you loads of people to talk with you, because you. So going from Queer as Folk, it was really, really formative for the years. And I'm so happy that, you know, he still did revisit the lives of white gay men dying of AIDS. We're wiped out and the stories still need to be told. And I think it opened up the floodgates for a conversation around HIV again today. But I do think more representation is needed of stories. I think shows like Pose are incredible and everyone should watch them for more representation of different communities affected by HIV. So Russell T. Davis, fair play to him. He's done a lot for the community and for HIV, starting conversations at times when conversations didn't want to be started.
He really, really has, yeah. And well, to go to Sean on that one, like that ripple effect that Robbie's talking about and that starting conversation, like we would have seen in Sex and the City in the 90s when the rampant Rampant Rabbit really became a thing as like one of the first few sex toys like to be shown on TV, and it was used in this lovely, lovely positive way. So Queen of Vibrators, you know, do you think that like that, how I suppose like any good pop culture references to vibrators and that kind of just unabashed joy of masturbation out there?
Yeah, like one that immediately springs to mind is Grace and Frankie, because that was like literally the main plot line of season two. They're starting a vibrator business, and not just like a vibrator business. It's like they're addressing sex and aging. They're addressing like disability, talking about like making it good for people with arthritis, having a grip on the handle that's like good for people with arthritis. So like that immediately sprung to mind. I think oftentimes we talk about like vibrators a whole lot and nothing else. And so one example I thought of that I really just loved, and when I saw it just started screaming, was the episode of Broad City where Abby like pegs the guy that she's sleeping with. This to my memory was the first time I ever heard or saw anyone on television or anyone talking about pegging outside of like Dan Savage's podcast. I was just beside myself with joy that like that was something that could be like talked about on TV, and it was done in a really positive way. She wasn't shaming him for being into that. She was just like, oh fuck, I don't know what to do. And so like ran to the bathroom to like ring Alana, and Alana was just like so excited that she got to experience, or is about to be able to experience something that she's always wanted to. Like that was like the holy grail for her. So it was handled in such a wonderfully positive way. You don't see many examples of. And when we talk about like celebrity and like the recent barrage of celebrity endorsements of like sex toys, so you have like, you know, Lily Allen for Womanizer, Cardi B, Cara Delevingne is like repping a brand. Who else do I have here? Dakota Johnson, Gwyneth Paltrow, like everyone is repping vibrators now, and you don't see many celebrities, if any, repping any other type of sex toy. So I think there's still like some stigma attached to like butt plugs and dildos and masturbation sleeves that I think we need to work on. We need to step up our game. If we can talk about pegging on Comedy Central, we can definitely talk about, you know, have celebrities like rep a wider variety of sex toys, I think.
Absolutely. And that's something one thing that we really love and that we've talked about before in the past, especially on our Active Consent social media, is Masturbation Week or Masturbation Month. If no one's aware, May is Masturbation Month. And we've always thought of, like, it's amazing that we have an entire month for it, even though, you know, it should be every month. But the idea that if you know what you like, and if you know your own body, it's so much easier then to tell your partner what you like and also what you don't like. Mm. And that is really vital whenever it comes to actually communicating consent and practicing consent in relationships, because it's as much about what you really like as much as what it is about what you don't like. And I think especially growing up, I think especially as young women, you're kind of brought up like with TV and music and films and all these different sorts of things. You kind of get the message that sex isn't for you. And it's amazing now, yeah, that we have so many female celebrity vibrator endorsements. Although, as you've said, Shauna, it would be great to have a few more, brighten or broaden the field a bit. But that, like, that did not exist whenever I was young, whenever I was a teenager, just no one talked about it. It was like, girls don't speak about masturbating. What are you saying? Like, you've got endless jokes in films about guys masturbating. You've got like American Pie, but we didn't really have the female equivalent to see. So it's really interesting now and very good to see how it's flipped.
For sure.
I think like, well, let's get Robbie in on that then as well, because like those sex toy endorsements and stuff, they're really for straight women a lot of the time. Like that's their target audience. So like where's all the queer male sex toys out there? Robbie, tell us you know, what you're gonna do to change that world.
Oh god. I wish I could change the world. The only thing, that reason why we go into sex shops online would we get good lube. Essentially, you know, we wouldn't really go outside of that. Mia Morris, I had this really bad sex toy experience, to be honest, that traumatized the hell out of me. But I think it traumatized me because I didn't know how to use it properly. And maybe, I don't know how explicit this podcast is. Maybe this is one for a pint afterwards or something. But I don't know if I'm the best ambassador for sex toys. But I actually think me and my fella just reached the 8-year part of our relationship now. I think it's, well, I think it's well past time that we could like spice it up with sex toys and see what happens for whatever does need sex toys. But you're right, representation and visibility of even hearing gay men using sex toys other than in porn, which is what we see most, could be super powerful. And I think we do need to see more of.
Mm, definitely. Yeah. And what about you, Masha? Like, does Bollywood feature sex toys? I'm going to guess that the answer is no.
Unfortunately not. I did not even own my first sex toy till like a few months ago, and I got it off Sex Shop. But my Sex Press editor for the University Express helped me buy my first sex toy because I had no clue what was going on. I did not know where to start. I did not know who to reach out to, but she literally helped me choose what I like and be like, this might work for you, this, and I love it. It's just the best thing I have and the best thing I own. But like growing up, sex toys were big taboos. Like, you can't talk about them. Masturbation doesn't exist. Women were not allowed to feel pleasure and not allowed to like make themselves feel pleasure, which I thought was weird because I discovered masturbation when I was like 14, 15 maybe. And I was just like, this is really cool. But like, it's not really like I couldn't talk about it with my mom. I couldn't talk about it with my friends, because it was just such a closed off community towards masturbation and sex toys. And I was just like, it wasn't even shown in my, like, what's the word? In my pop culture growing up, it wasn't visible at all. And I was just like, but now I'm just like living. So yeah.
That's fantastic, Amash. I love it that you're living your best life. One thing I wanted to touch on is that we've talked a lot about kind of our formative experiences, but we've been really spoiled during the pandemic somehow that we've gotten quite some really good TV and also some really interesting nuanced examples of sex and consent and non-consent in particular. And I wanted to throw in, if anyone had watched I May Destroy You, because I thought it was such a fantastic example of some examples that we don't really see often. So we've got stealthing, which for anyone that doesn't know is when someone intentionally removes a condom during sex without telling their partner. So an example that a lot of people might have experienced not knowing that it actually is assault. And also it showed us a gay male character as well that was experiencing non-consent and how they kind of recovered from that. And I thought it brought up so many, you know, really nuanced examples. And I was wondering, did we have any thoughts on it?
I remember I watched I May Destroy You last year, and I did a whole essay for one of my modules because I thought it was such an impactful TV show, and I May Destroy You literally destroyed me inside because I felt like it was such an important topic that that was shown on TV. And it's not every day that you see someone, a survivor, telling their story on TV and trying to go through that process of like recovering from that trauma, getting involved with the police and stuff like that. And it's just such a great representation, and Michaela Cohen is fabulous, and I loved that TV show so much, and I loved that it was not just using that same cisgender white person's story, but rather also using a story of a person of color, because you rarely see those representations on TV, let alone like a person of color talking about being a survivor. And I thought that was very important for the general community. So those were my thoughts on that.
Really important to have that representation out there. And the fact that Michaela Cohen wrote it as well, so it's not her words being filtered through somebody else, like, and specifically, like, you know, a lot of people who make these shows are cis white men or cis white women. So it's really important that she actually created that and had that power to have her words be represented as she intended them to be. So that's super powerful. So what about yourself, Robbie? Do you have any thoughts there?
Yeah, it's just, stealth breaks my heart because I actually know two people who got HIV through stealthing, both a man and a woman.
God.
And the shame they feel. Yeah. Like, even now, I know they have such a hard time and they're the loveliest people in the world. And they have so much shame as if, one, they didn't see it as sexual assault. Well, because one, the thing is, they didn't know they have HIV for a while after. Do you know what I mean? Because you never experienced, didn't know, didn't really know what was happening at the time. They blamed themselves for being drunk. All of these different things. It's a very real thing that does happen. And when you have that, like, and compound that with a HIV diagnosis and all the shame that kind of comes with that, I just want to say to people, you know, that it's not your fault for being stealthed. You can never be too drunk or too high or whatever. You don't deserve that. That is sexual assault, and acknowledge it as so. And don't beat yourself up for, I should have done this, I should have done that. You know, this person had intent stealthing, and they didn't tell you. So it is an assault. And just to really just kind of talk to people who you know you can trust to share this with, because again, shame can make you hold these things inside. And I certainly know when it comes to HIV, the worst thing we can do is keep it secret and to hide things, bottle them up. That can be almost as it is as harmful as the virus that's untreated. So I would say reach out to people and just acknowledge that you're not a problem here, that, that this does happen and that you are a victim of assault. And so there's not so many services out there as well to reach out to. If you want to talk about any of the HIV services, get in contact with me, but HIV Ireland's a great one and they do a lot of counselling support.
I think that's a really fantastic point. Like, people really struggle with being victims of sexual violence and naming it as well, and for us as viewers to name what we're seeing on screen and stuff. And I know Shauna, you had a lot of thoughts about the film The Piano before, and that was like viewed as like this Oscar winning, you know, film. It was like I think it won a whole range of awards, I'm pretty sure. But that deals with some very uncomfortable topics, like in the same thread as Robbie is saying.
Yeah, I have a really complicated relationship with the film The Piano, because I love it to my core. I love that film so much. And I think it has a lot going for it. And yet it's like the core central premise is about a woman trying to get her piano back by way of like acquiescing to a man's like romantic and sexual like exploitation of her. And I'm trying to gather my thoughts on it, because it's so complicated and so complex. And when you like look back on it, and it's funny, like I didn't see that film until in like I think the last couple of years was like the first time I saw that film, and I was like, this is wrong, this is really wrong. And it was produced by Miramax, which was Harvey Weinstein's baby. Like, that was his, like, that film was his baby. So it just adds an extra layer of ick to it. And yet it's just like such beautiful performances by Holly Hunter and like Harvey Keitel and Sam Neill, and exploring. And I think like oftentimes when things are set in like a historical context, it gives a lot of, people make a lot of excuses for it. It's like, well, that's just the way it was back then. But it's also being held up as like almost a sort of like romantic fantasy ideal. And I have to like remind myself that it's not necessarily any one story or any one film, but the totality of like misogyny and rape culture that is like the main core problem. One thing I thought was really interesting about the film, there's one scene in particular where the little girl who's played by Anna Paquin and is hanging out with all of the Maori children. It takes place in New Zealand, and they're replicating what she saw her mom doing with Harvey Keitel. And so they're like grinding up against trees, and all the Maori parents are just like, that's just what kids do. Like thinking it was just, you know, just natural. These kids are just playing or whatever. And they're like kissing and making out with like the trees. And then like Sam Neill comes along and is like, you know, puritanical colonizer, like, what are you doing? You're like bringing shame to these trees kind of thing, and just like drags her away. So I thought it was, there was a really interesting kind of conversation happening in that one scene between like puritanical colonizer, like, rape culture and a very kind of patriarchal view of sexuality versus like the Maori's like view of sexuality and just like, yeah, it is what it is. Like it's natural.
I think you're so right, Shauna, in saying that, you know, we can really, especially when it comes to film and TV, you know, we can love these things and still acknowledge maybe the complexities that exist in them. One, I saw a post recently about, and I know I'll probably get a lot of flack for this, but I've never seen Call Me By Your Name, but it did bring up how, and I thought this was so interesting that you might get a lot more scrutiny on a film that has an age gap romance if it's a heterosexual couple. But people were saying how, and like Call Me By Your Name was such a celebrated film, won so many awards, got so much critical acclaim. Everyone shipped Timothée Chalamet and Armie Hammer. But actually, it's, you know, that if you like kind of get down to brass tacks, Timothée Chalamet's character is underage and kind of being preyed upon by a much older man. And why do we feel maybe differently, or why would we not scrutinize that as much because it's a gay couple? And I was wondering, Robbie, did you have any thoughts on that or any opinions?
I found it extremely weird movie. Like I loved it. I wanted to go to Italy the following day. It was so beautifully set. But yeah, just that, like I think in gay culture, it's this thing about daddy and son. Like it's a real kind of fetish. It's real language you use. Like it's all of these things. And I think it was kind of like impersonating that, do you know what I mean? But yeah, I did find it weird. Was he 16 or 17? Because in Italy, I think the age of consent is 16 or 17. So I don't know if he was underage technically, but it's like just the parents are just so cool with it. Do you know what I mean as well? It's just really strange. And I think one of the things I did like about it, that I don't really like I don't like queer movies so much because they're always coming of age movies, always. And I just get bored of them. I'm so sick. I'm like, they're very important stories to tell and so many people get them out, but because I've seen them so much and it's the same story over and over, this was a kind of coming of age but in a very different way, so I appreciated that about it. But yeah, the age difference was a little bit weird. The fact that no one blinked an eyelid, I'm like, maybe it's Italian culture, I don't know.
And also it was the 80s, like everything, you can make an excuse for everything if it's set in a historical context.
Yeah, exactly. So that's I don't have much thoughts on it except that it's beautifully set. But I do think it does open up this really interesting thing about like how, is it problematic or is it just fantasy? Or is that both, about the whole daddy son thing, do you know, and relating and that, and because like what's the kind of body type and how young is young to meet these fantasies? And I know in the hetero world, this is very much a big thing too, but like, I feel like over the last few years, since this daddy son dynamic has just kind of blown out. And I think it's kind of showcased in this movie.
Yeah. I just wanted to touch up on that. Like, I'm hoping that many of you have watched Euphoria, and like there is that like the daddy kind of vibes that Cal Jacobs gives, and like how he uses that to get with underage gay men or transgender men or women. And I think it's just very interesting because like it is portrayed in a TV show that is literally like, you know, shown now. It is like coming out every year as well as renewed for another season. And it is also portrays very badly like consent, which I think the fact that it is now like being shown to people younger than us and that their understanding of consent would also come out from that, it really kind of like highlights like really bad representation of consent. And I was just like, that just came to my mind when you were saying that there. So
Excellent point to have. And yeah,
also if we're going to talk about like age gap relationships, like Licorice Pizza came out recently. I haven't seen it yet, but I was reading an article by someone who did, who was talking about how if it wasn't a big glossy Paul Thomas Anderson film, you know, would we be praising it as much? Because it's about a 25-year-old woman starting a relationship with I think he's 15 in the film. So like, and again, like, are we excusing it because the older person is female?
That's so true. I've seen similar kind of discourse, especially on TikTok, people talking about licorice pizza, thinking, would we feel as comfortable about this if it was gender flipped? And the whole idea of who has the power, and just Masha bringing up Euphoria there, like, I know, spoiler alert for everything we've talked about in this, by the way, but Kat, who is played by Barbie Ferreira, having, I think it's the first time she actually has sex, or some sexual experience she has, is with a guy in his 20s, and she's maybe only 15 or 16. And it's meant to be portrayed as quite powerful. Afterwards, he asks her, did you come? And she says no. And she walks off like a badass. And it's kind of meant to be portrayed as really powerful. But it's like, no, because she's still underage. She's still much younger. She doesn't actually have the power there. And to kind of glamorize that in a way is kind of irresponsible when you know that you have a young audience watching this.
It is a very glamorized show. Like, even the relationship with Nate and Cassie, Nate and Maddie, it just allows like younger people to visualize and glamorize, oh, him being this bad boy that is violent all the time is the bad boy that I want, which really isn't what should be portrayed. I know Euphoria is like trying to write the truth as well, but at the same time, it's just not a great show for, especially for younger viewers. So yeah.
Well, something that was accused of corrupting the youth and we have to save the children were two of my favorite songs from the past little while, and that was Cardi B and Megan Wap and Lil Nas X, where he gives a lap dance to Satan. So everyone was like, oh my god, think of the children. But like, actually, these were like really powerful songs to have, you know. And especially, like, let's talk about Cardi B first. Like Wap, people should know what that stands for by now. What do they dub it as on YouTube? Macaroni in a pot. I think that was the like radio friendly dubbing that they could do on it. But like, that was really powerful and actually like spawned a million conversations about female sexual pleasure and enjoyment and what to do if things aren't working and lube and all these kind of things. Shauna, did you see a spike in like lube and toys after that show came out, or that song?
After that show came out, not specifically. The one memory I have of that time period of like when that song just like the weekend that song just exploded, Kylie Minogue released a single, and like there was like a few people on Twitter who were just like, oh my god, I feel so sorry for like Kylie, because her song was really good too, but it wasn't WAP. So it just got completely eclipsed. But I don't think I saw any like massive spike in sales, but yeah, it just amazing how it just completely just took over everyone's brains for years.
And one thing I think was so important about WAP as well is that, for, you know, one message I think especially a lot of young girls get is that they should be quote unquote tight, when in fact that is probably a sign that maybe your partner is not, their body isn't ready, they're not aroused, they're not ready. And now we've got this chart topping song that you can barely play on daytime radio because there's so much profanity in it, talking about, no, you want to be as wet as humanly possible. And, like, what an amazing message.
Oh god, and how hot are they? Like, Jesus Christ, it's beautiful. My god, but the lyrics are great. For example, hop on top, I want to ride, I do a kegel while it's inside. Spit in my mouth, look at my eyes, this pussy is wet, come take a drive. Like, can we just say, like, this is women taking control, this is their pleasure, they're saying exactly what they want. Like, how many women do you see in pop culture saying, spit in my mouth, because they want it? It's gorgeous, it's beautiful, it's poetry. I think it's amazing. I think it's really, really, you know, a game changer, really, for female sexuality. It really just goes that extra mile than what you see as female sexuality portrayed in it. And they're doing it on their own terms, which for me is just incredible. Like, it's just beautiful.
And go on, Karen.
No, I was just going to say, and what did you think of Lil Nas X's lap dance with Satan, Ben?
Can you believe they came out in the same year? Just a few months apart. They were so happy. I loved it. And I loved what happened afterwards, just like the moral panic that happened afterwards. It's kind of reminiscent. I didn't live around the time, but it reminded me of the moral panic around this like mixing of religion and sexuality, like Madonna's Like a Prayer did, kind of, do you know what I mean? You know, like, everyone's going crazy. But I love it because Lil Nas said, who I used to call Little Nace, by the way, which was really embarrassing. I genuinely thought,
yeah,
was,
same.
Yeah. Little Nace ball. But my niece hated me for saying it. he said, you know, I was also told growing up as a queer black kid in the States that if I was gay, I was going to go to hell. So what did he do? He literally put on tie-high boots. He kissed the snake that was played by himself. He was in this Garden of Eden-esque. He was killed by loads of butt plugs on Judgment Day. He was sent down to hell on a stripper's pole, and then he gave the devil a lap dance. And not only that, he killed the devil, put on his horns, and became the devil. I'm like, you just can't get more iconic than that, giving the devil a lap dance. And it just shows, if you're going to go to hell, that's where the fun's at.
That's so true. One comment we've gotten in the chat, someone said that Weekend, a film from 2011, was one of the first films that they saw depicting a queer romance. And Colin says, I loved it, but like so many queer films, their relationship is depicted in a really harrowing way, like a lot of queer media, unfortunately. And that's why it's so important that we have people like Lil Nas X who are actually so unapologetically owning their sexuality is and in such a mainstream way and taking a lot of those negative messages and saying, actually, I'm going to flip these in their head because this is so true. And it's such a, to the point where it's a trope, like, has anyone heard of the kill your gays trope about how in so much media, and if anyone remembers Tara and Willow and Buffy, an iconic lesbian couple from the 90s, how someone will die, basically. And you've even seen it in, is it Haunting of Hill House or is it Haunting of Bly Manor, there's a lesbian couple, and I'm pretty sure, spoiler alert, they both end up dead in the end. And how so many films and TV shows that depict queer romance, it's often historical, someone usually has to die at the end, and it's always really, really bleak. So the positive examples that we can get are so important.
What, like, on that note, like that, yeah, that positive joy, like queer joy and just straight joy and all the joy, all the sex joy, like, what do you think growing up would have been like if you had all those lovely, lovely examples of like lovely, positive, consensual encounters, lovely, sex positive things? And I suppose we'll use that as our last question as we go to wrap up. So I'm going to go to Amasha. I mean, if you could design like a queer, sex positive, consensual Bollywood movie, like I would watch that all day long.
I would as well, and I won't have to come out to my mom for the fourth time again. it's constant. Every year I have to come out to her because she's just like, what is queer? And it's just this whole process because like it's not represented in Bollywood or in Sri Lankan soap operas that she watches every single day very well. And like it's just represented as taboos and stuff. But like there are so many amazing queer activists that are in Sri Lanka and are coming out with like, we need to see more of this in our own pop culture and stuff that we are growing up with. And we shouldn't be shaming women for wanting to express their sexuality. And I think that's very important. And I would love to see that in Bollywood. And I would love to see that in Sri Lankan soap operas. But like, and I think Bollywood is doing that slowly. It's taking its time, but it is doing it slowly enough, with especially they decriminalize being gay in India, which I think is fantastic because it wasn't something that was like being gay wasn't allowed in India, but still they still represented queer women on TV, which I was just like, that is very, like it contrasts each other. But now like I feel like South Asia is really, really like, you know, becoming more open and allowing more people to come out as queer and to allow more queer activists in South Asia, and I love to see it, and it's just fantastic. So yeah.
And what about yourself, Shauna, if you could design lovely positive cultural experiences, what would you do?
I really want to see more queer Irish media. Just give it all to me. Like, love Derry Girls. Derry Girls is great. Are we going to see Nicola Coughlan with a girlfriend? Like, in season 3? I fucking hope so. I think that would be lovely. And I want to see more examples of that. Let's make that happen. But also it's very telling that like what the Derry Girls is Channel 4, isn't it? They're Channel 4. Yeah, so RT, come on, give us the queer media desperately crave.
And Robbie, what about yourself?
I want to see more poswaps. That's what I want to see. So basically, I would love to see people living with HIV talk openly about their experiences and how they regained their sexual being, how they regained their sexual self. There's this sexual revolution happening around the world, and I actually think people living with HIV shouldn't be at the back trying to catch up. I think they should be at the forefront, because when you live with HIV, your sexual, your confidence is through the floor. You never think anyone want to touch you again. You think you're quote unquote dirty. But what I've seen about people, regardless of gender or sexuality, is regain their sexual self, an idea of themselves around communication, around desire, shame. And from at the beginning of all partnerships, these conversations happen. And I think we can just gain so much from that, and seeing people who were considered the problem of sex actually be the leaders of what a sexual revolution is. So I would love to see that represented and really diversified through the voices of all the people in this country and around the world.
And even, Robbie, on that point, just while we have a couple of minutes, I'd love to see as well just a bit of diversity in how we even represent HIV, because isn't it true that for the first time, it's actually there's more cases, new cases of HIV among heterosexual couples for the first time than there is with queer or bi men? And that's, people still have this idea that it's a queer disease or it's a disease for gay men, and it's not something that really affects straight couples.
Yeah, exactly. I know so many people, that's in London, by the way, not so much in Ireland yet, but hopefully we can get there. Hopefully we can get to zero new HIV infections. I love you heteros too. I do think that's super important. I know women living with HIV who come up to me like, probably not to be a bad thing, but I thought HIV was a gay thing. Because there's no representation or education, because there's not a diversification of this visibility where people can be like, oh, I can get that too. So I do think that's hugely, hugely important. And the conversation needs to happen. We can have these leaders, you know, as Amasha was saying, but we need to make society feel safer for these leaders who are budding in this country. I know women who are just at the tip of it and they're going to do it, but they feel like it's becoming safer and safer. But we all have our part to play to make them feel like actually they can do it now. They might get some bad eggs saying it to them, but ultimately the overall support's going to be better for them. So we need to get there.
It's a much better
I've got a plan. I think the only way we're going to get like good representation in Ireland on RTE is if we sneak it into a property show. I think that's the only way we're gonna get it in. I mean, once we get it into the property shows, then we can work on like, you know, fictional characters and stuff. But
Dermot Banning hosting, we'll get in our
yeah.
That is actually like, there's a lot of merit in that idea, so yeah, hold on to that and pitch that. So listen, you've all been absolute legends. I love that the content that you've brought forward, and I definitely want to go and watch a whole lot of things now and listen to a whole lot of songs, and I'm going to go play some Cardi B after this as well, just to get back into it. Where can people find you if they want to follow all the amazing work that you're doing? We'll start with Shauna there.
Yeah, you can go to my website, sexshoppa.ie. That's sexshiopa.ie. I'm also on Instagram at sexshoppa, all one word. Or if you want to just see me hanging out with my dog on TikTok, it's more of a personal account than a professional one. But I'm at like Shauna, Shawna underscore Scott, Scott, over on TikTok.
Fabulous. Robbie?
On Twitter, you can get me on Robbie_Lawler. On Instagram, you can get me RobbieLWR, I think. And if you want to listen to my podcast with Veda Lady, it's an iconic podcast. It's called the Pause Vibe Podcast. And we platform the voices of people living with HIV around this country and around the world. It's very, very fun and insightful. So give it a
fantastic
check.
Well done. And Amasha.
Forgetting you have to unmute. So you can find me on Twitter. My username is Case of Burritos, as always. You can also find the Feminist Society on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We are the UCC FemSoc. And you can also find the University Express on Twitter, on Instagram, and on Facebook. And we have issues coming out in the next few months. That's where you can find me.
Fabulous. And I left you to last because you also have a fantastic event coming up the start of March, which Active Consent will be at as well.
Oh yeah, right. I completely zoned out. I was just like, yeah, we do. So we have Fempower happening. Woo! So we have Dr. Caroline West coming in with a few podcasts. And we have some amazing, amazing speakers coming in for our 2-week conference. We also have an entertainment evening where we are hoping to have a few amazing artists come in. We will also be having a poetry slam, and we will be having an art showcase, and we have some really, really interesting events that I'm really excited for. So I can't say much at the moment. So
that's not super exciting.
Can I just say, like, I have spoken at Fempower like a couple of years in a row, and it is seriously one of the most, like, best organized, like, just most fun I've ever had at, like, a university conference. Like, you guys do such a good job putting that on. So for anyone who's interested, absolutely, I second that. Go to Fempower. It's amazing.
Oh, my gosh, Shauna, you should come down to Cork, like, and come and see Fempower there, as well as you, Robbie. So,
well, myself and Alex will be there anyway. We are going to do a live Act of Consent podcast on the Sunday, and we'll have a live Glow West podcast on the Saturday. So we're going to be all over your business live streaming from there. So that's fantastic. So, Alex, where can you find us? We're important too.
Where can you find us? You can find the Greenlight podcast on consenthub.ie, which is your one-stop shop for all your consent needs. Our new website in partnership with the Department of Justice and the Department of Further and Higher Education. On Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, you can find us at Active Consent, and we're talking about consent every day of the week, and you can find out a lot more info about all the fantastic events happening this week as part of Consent Week with NUIGSU.
Fabulous. So if anyone's listening to this and they're in the audience, we are having a live in-person consent workshop tomorrow in NUIG. So do have a look at the NUIG Student Union socials. They'll have all the details of it there. And if you're listening to this after it comes out and you've missed that, like, We will go to any consent week around the country, you know, like, so please do put something on and we will happily be there. So thanks, Mill, to everyone for listening in. We really do appreciate, you know, the hour that you've given us today. If you've got any value out of this, please do pop over and give us a rate and review, or follow us again, as Alex said, on our socials, and, you know, help us get the word out about the podcast. And thanks, everyone. And we will chat to you next time.